for a few days, and I guess it was Monday. Brother Don and I were talking a little bit about church growth and people being saved and things like that, and we asked each other a couple of very pointed questions. And I finally just had to tell him, Brother Don, I just don't know that the zeal that I have is the same as I had when I was saved. When I first trusted Christ, my desire was to tell everybody that I met about Christ. Today, I still want to tell people about Christ. But I don't have the same fervency that I had at one time in my life. Maybe it's because at that time I was almost 16 and now I'm almost 60. Or I am 60. Had to think how old I was for a moment there. And so I want to maybe preach on that a little bit this evening. And I want to preach this message for about the fourth time to myself tonight and the first time to you. Because I never preach anything to you that I haven't preached myself at least once. But for the last two or three days, I have not been able to really get away from that thought about winning people to the Lord. And so I want us to look at a story that's found in Matthew, Mark, and in Luke. We're only going to take the narrative from the Gospel of Luke. But it's also, I think it's in Matthew chapter 9 and in Luke chapter 5. One of the reasons that I chose Mark is because of the description that is given. And so I want us to just kind of get the picture here. And we'll begin reading in verse 1, and then I'll comment on the background. And again, he entered into Capernaum after some days. Now, if you read chapter 1, he had already started spending time in Capernaum. He had already had some things happen there. First of all, he had called Peter. Then he had cast out some unclean spirits. Then he healed Peter's mother-in-law. And the crowds were getting so great around him, finally he told his disciples, he said, let's go preach in some other places. And so he began to travel around the villages of the area that we know as Galilee. And so he is now back in the city of Capernaum. And it was noised that he was in the house. The Greek word for house there is home. Some people think, and I think this, I think that this is probably the Apostle Peter's home. He would have been invited, certainly, once he called Peter and Peter had trusted him. There's no doubt that Peter would have wanted his Savior, his Lord, his Rabbi in his home anytime he was in Capernaum. And so he was probably in Peter's house. And straightway, many were gathered together. Later on, we'll see who those many are. If you read all three of the accounts, you'll find that there were doctors of the law there. There were lawyers there. There were probably some scribes that were there. And they had come from all around Galilee to hear him preach and to teach the word of God. His fame had begun to spread. And so there were many people gathered together, insomuch there was no room to receive them. No, not so much as about the door. In other words, not even near the door, the front door of the house or the rear door of the house, there was not much room for people to get in. It was packed. Well, what was he doing there? He preached the word unto them. One of the things that you'll find throughout the Gospel of Mark, you'll find that Jesus is preaching constantly. Verse 3, and they come unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy. In other words, we've got a paralytic man. We don't know if he was a quadriplegic, but we know he was certainly a paraplegic. He could not walk. And so It says they come, and he says that they were, that this man was born, or he was carried by four. So he had four friends that carried him. And when they could not come nigh unto him for the press or for the crowd, they uncovered the roof where he was. In other words, they didn't give up. They said, we've got to get our friend to Jesus. Perhaps they had seen him in the past, that when he was in Capernaum at the beginning. Maybe they had personally been helped. Perhaps they had experienced salvation in a miraculous way. Maybe these were men that had had an unclean spirit cast out of them. Maybe they were a relative of Peter's mother-in-law, and they knew how that Jesus had touched her and the fever had left. And so the only thing we know is that these men had a friend that they wanted to get to Christ. Well, they began to break up the roof. And when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. When Jesus saw their faith, I want you to circle, if you have a pen, I want you to circle the little word there. It was their faith, the four men's faith. If you read Matthew's account of this story, Matthew talks about their faith. If you read Mark's account, which we just did, it's their faith. And if you read Luke's account, it also says their faith. Jesus saw their faith. And the question I ask myself is this: do I really believe that if I get an unsaved person to Jesus, that Jesus can do something with them? Now, have you ever asked yourself that? Or do you think that there are some people that are just too far gone? Now let that sink in for a moment. There are some people that have done heinous things. But there are also people that have done heinous things that have met the Lord. Their sins have been forgiven. Now, there are times in my own mind that I don't necessarily want somebody to get saved. You think about somebody that harms a child. Do I really want that guy to go to heaven? But did you know Jesus died for that guy just like he did for me and you? But my heart says, I don't want to be in heaven with him. You know who's got the problem? I do. Because Jesus died for the sins of the world. He did not qualify that. So if I love the Lord and I'm preaching that Jesus will save, that means he'll save anybody from their sins. 1 John 1:7 says, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Jesus Christ, God's Son, cleanses from all sin. I have people ask me often, I bet you it happens 4 or 5 times a year, what is the unpardonable sin? Is there a sin that cannot be forgiven? Not if we believe 1 John 1:7. Does all mean all? Or do we start parsing the language? If we begin parsing the language, does whosoever mean whosoever? Does when it says God is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance, does that not mean that God does want all people to be saved? Doesn't mean they will. It just means that he would like for them to. And so, when we look at this passage, these men brought their friend to the Lord. And so, as we continue to read, they let him down on the little bed or the mat that they had probably tied maybe four ropes, one to each corner. Jesus saw their faith, and he looks at the man and he says, "Son, thy sins be forgiven." Well, immediately, there were certain of the scribes sitting there, and they reasoning in their hearts, "Who can forgive but God?" And so, they began to think, "Well, man, he's speaking blasphemies. I mean, who does this guy think he is? Thy sins be forgiven." Well, in verse 8 it says, immediately, and by the way, when you're reading the Gospel of Mark, you'll find the word immediately or straightway, which are synonymous with each other, you will find that constantly in this gospel. You don't find a lot of fluff with the Gospel of Mark. I mean, Mark is just bam, immediately, immediately, straightway, straightway. And so, immediately, when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, "Why reason ye these things in your heart?" Well, immediately you've got to think, if you're one of these guys, that guy's reading my mind. How does he know what I'm thinking? And that's got to give somebody pause, doesn't it? But whenever you continue reading throughout the Gospels, their pride would not let them in mass numbers come to Christ. As a matter of fact, there are probably many Pharisees that came, but the scriptures only named two that I'm aware of that came to Christ: Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea. And so, Jesus continues and he says, "Why do you reason these things in your hearts? Whether it is easier to say to the sick of the palsy, 'Thy sins be forgiven thee,' or to say, 'Arise, take up thy bed and walk'?" Well, "But that you may know that the Son of God," by the way, that's a title that claims equality with the Father to the Jews, "but that you may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sin." In other words, I've got the power to forgive sin just like God has the power to forgive sin. "He saith to the sick of the palsy," he looks at this man and he says, "I say unto thee, arise, take up thy bed, and go thy way into thine house." Immediately, there's our word again, he arose, took up the bed, and went forth before them all, before the doctors, before the lawyers, before the people that had crammed into that house, before all of them, he walks out, insomuch that they were all amazed. They glorified God, saying, "We never saw it on this fashion. We never saw it this way." Man, I'm telling you, something happened at that house today. Now, I want us to back up in this story a little bit. There were four men that knew three things. These men knew three things. Now, they might have known more than this, but they did know this. And I want to give you these three things tonight, and I hope that you'll jot them down, because I want to apply them to my life, and I want you to apply them to your life. You see, I don't want to live in the past. I don't want to live in the glory days. I want God to do something in these days. I don't want to just rest on the laurels of the Corinth Baptist Church, which was founded in 1913. I don't want to just rest on the laurels of something that happened in 1956, the year I was born. I don't even want to rest on the laurels of what happened during the late 70s when I got here in 78, or the 80s, the 90s, or even the early 2000s. I want God to do something special today. I don't want to just rest on the laurels. And so these men knew three things, and I want us to learn them tonight. Number one, they knew they had a friend that needed help. Pretty simple, isn't it? They had a friend that needed help. Now, I don't know how long they've known each other. They could have been lifelong friends. Maybe they went to the rabbinical school together. Maybe they lived in the same little area of Capernaum. Maybe they had gone down to the local swimming hole, and one of them had swung out on a rope, and maybe he'd fallen in the wrong place, like I had an uncle who had a good friend that happened to, and he broke his neck, and he was a quadriplegic until the day that he died. So I don't know how the boy became a paraplegic or a quadriplegic. We just know that he had the palsy. He's a paralytic. We don't know how long they knew each other. But we know this, that once they became friends, there were five guys that were inseparable. These four men cared about a buddy that no longer could run and walk with them when they were just hanging around Capernaum. I mean, they were walking down to the place to get them a falafel. Well, our buddy can't go. He can't walk anymore. We can carry him. He gets heavy. And so they had a friend that they knew needed help. I began to think about my own life. Do you know who I know now? I know Christians. You know who I hang out with now? Christians. You know who I talk to most of the time? Christians. But when I met the Lord, I had a lot of heathen in my family. Many of them have come to know the Lord since then. A lot of friends that I grew up with, heathen. One of the first things that I wanted to do when I met Christ in 1972, I wanted to tell those guys that I had run with, that I had sinned with and played ball with, I wanted them to know something had happened to Tommy. And I wanted them to come to Jesus. I mean, I could just start naming names of guys that I would witness to. I could name people that were in my neighborhood. And I wanted to just talk to them about the Lord. I mean, it got to the point to where I would want to give out tracts and even street preach downtown Savannah. And me and two or three other guys would go down there on a Saturday. And we'd start giving out tracts on the street corners. Why? Because everybody needed what we had. Everybody needed it. I mean, I'd have people that I'd witness to over and over and over again, and they would see me on that street corner, and they would jaywalk to get across the street. I had friends that had a need. Some of them didn't even know it. Didn't even know it. And I'd be burdened about people. I remember whenever I was in college, there were times when we'd have a ball game and we'd have the opposing team and they'd have spectators that would come as well. After the games, one of the things that our coach would always tell us is this. He would say, guys, if you win this game and you gain their respect, you can talk to them about the Lord. And so our desire was to beat them as bad as we could so that they would listen to us when we talked to them about the Lord. It worked out that way a lot, not always, but a lot. And I just wanted people to learn about the Lord. I'd have a pastor of maybe the church, and he would say, hey, you want to go visiting with me? Yeah, I want to go visiting. I had a friend of mine, one Halloween, he was like, listen, why don't we go give out tracts? And we got to kicking this idea around, and one of the things that we came up with was this: let's go trick-or-treating. And somebody said, what in the world is trick-or-treating? Well, 2 days before Halloween, we just had some orange and black tracts printed up. And we just started knocking on doors, and we'd knock on a door and say, trick-or-treat, and they would go, it's 2 days early. Well, not for what we're doing. We did that for 2 nights in a row. And in 2 nights, we had 13 people that trusted the Lord. That's the kind of zeal that I was talking about. And now I look at myself and I think, why don't you track or treat now? Why don't you have the zeal now? You say, well, I'm old. But we ought to do what we can do. We ought to care as much as we've ever cared. And so these guys knew they had a friend that needed help. Let me ask you a question. Do you remember when you had an unsaved family member, how burdened you were about them? Do you remember that best friend that you had and you were burdened about them? And maybe you'd hear a preacher preach and you would think, I have got to call my buddy. I've got to go see that girl. I've got to talk to my uncle. I've got to talk to my grandpa. Why? Because their eternity mattered. I couldn't go to what used to be Fulton County Stadium. I could not go to a baseball game and look at 30 or 40,000 people without thinking every one of these people are going to die and most of them are going to hell. I couldn't get that thought out of my mind. These men had that concept. We've got somebody that we love. Somebody that we care about. And I want him to know Christ like we know him. Well, the second thing that these guys knew is this. They had heard the stories or experienced it themselves. They knew Jesus could help. Can I tell you that there's not a single person that you will ever come in contact with that Jesus cannot help? I don't care how bad they are. I don't care how far gone they think they are. Jesus can help them. A couple of years ago, my mom told me she ran into an old friend of mine that lived a couple of streets over from me. He knows that I'm a preacher and I've witnessed to him for many, many years whenever I would see him. The last time I saw him was when I did a funeral of a friend of mine. He's an alcoholic. And he told my mama, he said, Miss Gloria, he said, I'm just pretty much useless. He said, there's no hope for me. There's just no hope. And I thought, Kenny, there is hope. There is hope. If you'll let Jesus, he'll help you. These guys knew that he could do it. They knew it so much that they messed up a man's roof over it. Now, I'm not telling you that we need to start going messing people's houses up to win somebody to the Lord. But these guys did. And so they knew that the man sitting inside of that house could help. And I want you to know that the man that this Bible teaches us about, the God man, he can help anybody that crosses your path. Does not matter how far gone they are, Jesus can help them. You know, one of the things that I like to do from time to time is I like to read the testimony of Christians over the years. A few months ago, I was reading about old Christmas Evans, Welsh preacher from the late 16, early 1700s. And old Christmas Evans had one eye. He was a one-eyed preacher, and he got his name Christmas because he was born on Christmas Day. Well, old Christmas, another reason I like him is because he's a Baptist. But one of the things that happened in his life was this. He was raised with a rowdy bunch. But when he was in his early 20s, he met the Lord. And he began to witness to his buddies. And one night he had witnessed to them, and they were so mad with him that they attacked him, and they beat him so bad that he lost an eye. And he became known as the one-eyed Welsh preacher. And he preached all through the island of Wales. Literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people came to Christ. But when you read his testimony, and he talks about how it was before he got saved, how much of a heathen he was, and how he would steal, and how that he would fight, and how that he just lived a riotous life. And then the grace of God reached down and picked him up and saved him and set his feet on a solid rock. No longer was he in the miry clay. He was on solid ground. And that's just one story out of a million that you could read about. If you want to read some fantastic stories, read a book called Greater or Deeper Experiences of Famous Christians by G. Gilchrist Lawson. They'll talk about Bunyan, and they'll talk about Spurgeon, and they'll talk about all of these various people and how that when God stepped into their lives, things were totally different. These men in our passage, they knew that Jesus could help their buddy. The last thing that I want you to understand is this. These guys would not take no for an answer. They wouldn't do it. You think about the determination that these guys had to have. Perhaps they've gotten together and they began to talk. You know, we got our buddy here. You know, I heard Jesus is going to be over at Peter's house. Well, let's see if we can get our buddy over there. All right, how are we going to do it? Well, let's take this mat. And maybe we'll put some ropes on it. We'll tie him. We'll put him on our shoulder. And we'll just carry him on all four corners. And he'll ride on this quilt, or he'll ride on this mat. And they're excited about it because they know Christ can help him. They've seen it. Maybe they've experienced it. But they know it. And so, off they go. Their buddies are... It's in the mat. He's going, man, I appreciate you guys doing this for me. I'd never get there were it for you. Oh, man, you're our friend. You're our buddy. Hey, we're going to get to Jesus. And as they get on the road and they look down that lane a little bit and they see that house and there's people that are just standing around outside. And they're thinking, a lot of people there. They get there and somebody says, you can't get in. Well, I got to get in. I got my buddy here. I want Jesus to see him. I want him to help him. I'm sorry. You can't get in. There's no room. I mean, don't you see people coming out the door? Well, every crevice, every little corner has got somebody standing there. And so they think, well, we didn't come all this way to not let him see Jesus. And then one of them gets the idea. You know, there's some stairs around back. Because you see, in those Eastern cultures, they all have stairs on the outside that lead up to the rooftop, because in the evenings when it's cool, they go up there to try to get relief from the heat. And so they slip up those stairs, and they kind of in their mind think, well, this is probably about the middle. This would probably be where Jesus would be teaching. And so they begin to rip some of those tiles away. And maybe they begin to rip some of those branches away. Now, they didn't have asphalt shingles or tin roofs like we do, but they would have stone tiles, and they would have wood, and they would have dried mud, and they begin to break those tiles up. And all of a sudden, you got to think, Peter's thinking, what's that noise? And all of a sudden, he begins to see some things fall in front of Jesus. And he looks up, and it's the ceiling, the dirt coming down. He's thinking, what's happening to my house? I'd be thinking that. You know, something starts happening at your house, you want to find out what's going on with it. All of a sudden, he's got a head that's looking down through a hole. And the guy sees Jesus, and he goes, we're at the right place. They break that thing up a little bit more, and the next thing you know, you got four ropes with a mat and a guy that's in the middle of it, and it's just being let right down in front of the Lord. And somebody yells out, one of the guys, we had to get him to see you, Jesus. And Jesus, when he saw their faith, not the man's faith. We know he exercised his faith when Jesus said, son, thy sins be forgiven. But Jesus saw their faith. And so tonight I want you to think, do you have enough faith when God brings people your way to share with them that Jesus can help them? Do you really believe that Jesus can forgive their sins so they don't have to go to hell? Do you believe that not only for your family, but do you believe that for somebody that you don't even know? You see, that's to me a very important question. Because you see, once I got saved, and I knew that my mom and my daddy were saved, and I knew that my grandparents were saved, and I knew that I had most of my uncles and my aunts that were saved, and I knew I had a bunch of cousins that I'd witnessed to, and they had gotten saved. I knew that my little sister had gotten saved. I was feeling good. My close friends, a lot of them had gotten saved. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And when I'd have a new classmate come into school, I'd witness to them. Why? Because they had become my friend. But then once I got all the people that I was close to, I began to think outside of the family and the friends, to people that were just acquaintances. But it's got to the point now that I don't really think about the acquaintances a whole lot. Now, I tell you what I do think about. I got three grandbabies. Oh, and I constantly talk to them about trusting Jesus. Oh, I talk to them about loving the Lord. I talked about letting God work in your life as a little child. You say you're brainwashing them. Absolutely. Why? I don't want to be in heaven without my grandkids. But you know, I ought not to want to be in heaven without anybody on Langley Road. I ought not really want to be in heaven without folks from this community. Which brings us to this thought. What are we willing to do to reach our people around here? You know, we're a strong mission church. And I praise God for that. At the end of August, we will host the 50th anniversary for Macedonia World Baptist Missions. The majority of missionaries with Macedonia are foreign missionaries. Now, there are some that are in the States that are in places where there are no churches or they're few and far between. There's churches out in the West that have 200,000 people in the city and not one Baptist church. And so there are some people from Macedonia that have those ministries. But whenever we, as a church, look at the command in Acts chapter 1, it doesn't just say that we are to be a witness on the foreign field. It says that we are to be a witness both, or at the same time, in Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria and to the uttermost part of the earth. We're supposed to take this community and expand it to the little cities around us and expand it to the state of Georgia and expand it to the country and to the uttermost part of the earth simultaneously. Is it not hypocritical on my part if I have a neighbor move to my street and I'm willing to give money to missions and try to win somebody to Christ in Spain or try to win somebody to Christ in Jamaica, and I don't even care about the guy that just moved in down the road? These men would not take no for an answer. And I want our church to get to the point to where we are willing to do whatever is necessary, as long as it's biblical, to see people get saved. That's what it's all about. It's not about eating sandwiches and ice cream, even though that's fun. It's about seeing some people get saved. Because you see, everybody else's grandkids are important too, not just mine. Now I want mine to be saved. But I want other people to get saved as well. And I don't want to take no for an answer. I want to be willing to do whatever it takes. Metaphorically, I want to break up some roofs if we have to get people to Jesus. Are we willing to do that? Let's stand together. I appreciate you being here this evening. It's good to see you.